Akurki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani. Nirvaste Sisanivadi Paskachade Satarani. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Bitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Bitam Cha Manchakalpachubhishcha Kipasandavyavacha Patijanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavyadu Namo Namah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's April 10th, 2019, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home for the Forest, Text 22. Tameva vatsashraya britya vatsalam mumushkabir migya padabja padatim. Ananya bhave nija dharma bhavite. Manasya vastasya bhavasya purusham. Tam. Him.
Him.
Ava.
Ava.
Also.
Also.
Vatsa.
Vatsa.
My dear boy.
My dear boy.
Ashraya.
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 Take shelter.
Take shelter.
Vritya Vatsalam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead who is very kind to His devotees. Mumukshubhihi.
Also by persons desiring liberation.
Migya.
To be sought.
Pada Abja. Lotus feet. Pada team.
System.
Ananya bhave.
In an unflinching situation.
Nija dharma bhavite. Being situated in one's original constitutional position. Manasi. Unto the mind. Avastapya.
Avastapya.
Placing.
Placing.
One second. Bhavasva. Go on executing devotional service. Purusham. The supreme person.
The Supreme
Muted.
Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada's translation in purport. My dear boy, you should also take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. Persons seeking liberation, yeah? Okay, what about here? Is this better? Okay, my dear boy, you should also take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. Persons seeking liberation from the cycle of birth and death always take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service. Becoming purified by executing your allotted occupation, just situate the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart, and without deviating for a moment, engage always in his service. Purport. The system of bhakti yoga described by Queen Suniti to her son is the standard way of God realization. Everyone can continue in his constitutional occupational duties and at the same time keep the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart. This was also instructed by the Lord himself to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, "Go on fighting, but keep me within your mind." That should be the motto of every honest person seeking perfection in Krishna consciousness. In this connection, Queen Suniti advised her son that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Britya Vatsala, which indicates that he is very kind to his devotees. She said, "You came to me crying, having been insulted by your stepmother, but I am unable to do any good for you. But Krishna is so kind to his devotees that if you go to him, then the combined kindness of millions of mothers like me will be surpassed by his affectionate and tender dealings. When everyone else fails to mitigate one's misery, Krishna is able to help the devotee." Queen Suniti also stressed that the process of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not easy, but is sought after by great sages who are very advanced in spiritual realization. Queen Suniti also indicated by her instruction that Dhruva Maharaj was only a small child, 5 years old, and it was not possible for him to purify himself by the way of Karmakanda, but by the process of bhakti yoga, even a child less than 5 years old, or anyone of any age, can be purified. That is the special significance of bhakti yoga. Therefore, she advised him not to accept worship of the demigods or any other process, but simply to take to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the result would be all perfection. As soon as one places the Supreme Personality of Godhead within one's heart, everything becomes easy and successful. Tam eva vats. Vatsashraya Brityavatsalam Mamukshubir Migya Padabjapadatim Ananya Bhave Nijadharma Bhavite Manasyavastapya Bhavasva Purusham. My dear boy, you should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. Persons seeking liberation from the cycle of birth and death always take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service. Becoming purified by executing your allotted occupation, just situate the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart, and without deviating for a moment, engage always in his service. So Dhruva was very distressed that his stepmother had insulted him so severely. And I think these things are most distressful when they come from within the family. No, we may expect that somebody outside of our circle may deal with us harshly, but somebody within our circle, especially in the role of a parent, we expect that person to be a shelter, especially if we're only 5 years old. And of course, there's so many examples in the Bhagavatam of stepmothers who were kind and were loving. If we think, you know, in Ramlila, although Kaikeyi was very harsh, Sumitra was very kind and very loving. In fact, she gave her two sons as the servants of the other two sons. So she gave Lakshman as the servant of Ram and Shatrughna as the servant of Bharat. So generally we see within a family, even within step-parents and so forth, that there's kindness, that these people are a shelter. They're there for us. They support us. Just like, again, Suniti, she sent Lakshman to the forest. She was happy that Lakshman could go to the forest and serve the son of her co-wife. She didn't have envy. And that's what we expect. We expect that family is going to be shelter. I know when, after both my parents passed away, my mother in 2002, my father in 2003, all of a sudden I felt, oh, I have no shelter. You know, this is, we feel, my mommy and daddy, my brothers and sisters, you know, my children, my grandchildren, my cousins, my aunties, my uncles, they're going to be a shelter. And I think those of us in the Krishna conscious society, we feel like that about the other devotees. I remember my youngest son saying to me, you know, when we traveled in the world, whenever we went anywhere, he said, we saw the rest of the devotees as like family. You know, they're our shelter. They'll take care of me. You know, today I go to foreign countries where I don't know anybody at all. You know, and I don't know who's going to pick me up. I don't know where I'm going to stay. But I figure, well, they're devotees. They're like family. They'll just take care of me. And generally they do. But sometimes these other shelters are not shelters. Sometimes your own parent turns against you. I mean, here we have the stepmother, and of course the concept of an evil stepmother is prominent throughout the world, that idea. Stepfathers, even sometimes your biological mother, your biological father. Today there's so many abortions, so your biological mother is killing you. I was just reading that among African Americans in the United States, that more babies every year are aborted than are born. So your own mother may kill you in the womb. And we have so many instances where the biological father, the biological mother, they'll reject the child. I mean, we have the extreme case in the Bhagavatam of Hiranyakashipu trying to kill his child. You know, sometimes there are stories like this in the news of some parent who's torturing their child, raping their child, so many things. So sometimes the parents are not a shelter. Sometimes the parents become an enemy. Not only not a shelter, but they become an enemy. They turn against us. And, you know, I witness this sometimes, that people who are in distress because their family have become their enemy. And of course, nowadays it happens very common between husband and wife. You know, your husband becomes your enemy, your wife becomes your enemy. It's become actually quite commonplace. But ultimately, even if your family don't turn against you, they're still not your ultimate shelter. Just like my parents died. For most of us, our parents will die in our lifetime. In fact, it's expected that our parents will die in our lifetime. And then they're no longer a shelter for us. They're not there. There's no way we can take shelter of them. They're gone. And even during their lifetime, you know, they may not be able to help us. I'm not always able to help my children. I may be at a distant location, or even I may be right there. I may not be able to help them. I remember when my daughter got in a bad car accident, when she got hit by a truck, and she's taken in the ambulance, and I'm following the ambulance in another car. What could I do? I mean, I could pray, but what could I do? Whatever was to happen, I mean, she ended up being okay. But whatever was going to happen was going to happen, and I was powerless. So generally in this world, you know, we're thinking that so many people will be my shelter, and we get disappointed over and over and over again. And a lot of the grief and anxiety and anger and pain in this world is that someone I thought would be a shelter, they're not. You know, I thought my mother would be there for me, and she's not. I was just recently dealing with somebody where his father said, oh yes, you know, I'm happy with you. And then, you know, 2 days later, I'm not happy with you. I reject you. I don't even want to talk to you. And he was so devastated. So, you know, we become devastated when people that we thought were our shelter, that people who we thought were on our side, we thought would support us, we thought would be there for us, when they turn against us, or when they're just not there for us. And we end up sometimes hating those people. Sometimes even, you know, we kill those people. The vast majority of murders are between family members. Why? In many cases, it's because the person understood, this is not my shelter. I counted on this person. They weren't there for me. Let me kill them. And it's actually what happens. So here, Dhruva is just 5 years old, and his mother is saying to him, your only shelter is God. That's your shelter. You don't have any other shelter. She's telling him, don't be angry at your stepmother. It's interesting that he wasn't that angry at his father. I always find that interesting. He was angry with his stepmother and his stepbrother. It's also interesting that he was angry at his stepbrother, who was only five, also, or younger, maybe only three. And, but he wasn't angry at his father. He didn't blame his father, which is, again, I find very interesting. Many people in that circumstance, they'll be angry at their father. Why didn't you support me? You know? But she says, just give it up. Don't be angry at them. It's not their fault. They were never a shelter for you. You know, in one sense, you could say that it's their fault because they have certain obligations as family members or whatever. But Suniti's saying, no, they never were a shelter. The fault is not in them that they revealed that they weren't a shelter. The fault is in you for thinking that they're your shelter. And the vast majority of our grief and anger and fear and distress in this world with other people are because we're trying to impose something on them that they never were. They just never were. It's like you're not going to get roses from an automobile parts shop. You know, it's just not going to happen. It's not what they sell. So we're not going to get shelter from other jivas. Of course, other jivas can give us the shelter of Krishna. Like Prabhupada's talking about himself in terms of guru. He says, I'm your best friend in this sense, that I'm giving you your best friend. So we take guru as shelter. We take advanced devotees as shelter in that they can give us Krishna. But we don't take advanced devotees as shelter or guru as shelter independently. Like we're told not to worship the demigods independently. You know, you can worship the demigods as guru, Lord Shiva's guru, Lord Brahma's our Parma, Parma, Parma guru, but not as independently, not as if they were God. So Krishna here is the shelter because he's very kind to his servants. We have this word in the Sanskrit. Vritya. Vritya means servants. Ekala Ishwara. Krishna. Sarva Vritya. Everyone is a servant. Only Krishna is the Ishwara. But Krishna is very kind to his servants. In our material experience, people are not always kind to their servants in so many ways. Even if you're so-called kind to your servants. You know, how many times are the servants part of the family? I mean, my uncle and aunt had a butler who they really treated as part of the family. But that's not always the case. And as we were saying earlier, even within the family, there may not be kindness. But Krishna is very kind to his servants. I was just listening to this class Prabhupada gave on Bhagavad Gita 16:4-5. He's talking about the demoniac qualities. And he's saying that Krishna is very kind and loving with everyone. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. He said he gives everybody whatever they desire. Yayatamam prapajante tam sajaiva bhajamyaham. He said for the devotees, their desires become fulfilled immediately. For the demons, they're fulfilled through karma. But even through karma, atasmatir jnana apohanam cha, Krishna is giving the demons the intelligence how to engage in karma to get their desires fulfilled. So Krishna is very, very kind to everyone. He gives everybody everything that they desire. Everything they desire. Even if they desire something terrible. Right? Even if somebody desires to murder someone, Krishna gives them the intelligence, okay, here's this person destined to die violently, so you can be the agent. So Krishna, what to speak of how kind Krishna is going to be to his personal servants. If Krishna is kind to demons who hate him, you know, how kind are we to people who hate us? But if Krishna is kind to the people who hate him and who are trying to kill him, Someone tries to kill him, he offers them liberation. Someone tries to kill me, I want them to get the death penalty and suffer in jail, but Krishna gives them liberation. So how kind is he going to be to those who love him? And this theme is repeated throughout the Bhagavatam, that Krishna gave liberation to Putana. You know, how much is he going to give to his devotees? If he gives liberation to Putana, what is he going to give to Yasoda and Rohini? What is he going to give to all the older men and women who are serving him as parents? So he's unlimitedly kind. He's unlimitedly kind. Right? Prabhupada's saying here in this purport, he's kinder than millions of mothers. And this sort of account is given by so many people in so many traditions who have some experience of meeting God in some way. It's a universally attested fact that they'll say, I felt like I was with someone who was billions of times more loving than any friend or parent or anybody I'd experienced in this world. You know, millions, billions of times. If we can think of the most loving, kind, affectionate person that we know in this world, somebody who's always been, who really has always been there for us, and always been kind to us, and we multiply that by millions and billions of times, we get some idea of the kindness of the Lord. You know, it's just actually unfathomable to us. So what do? So we engage in bhakti. If Krishna is my shelter, millions and billions of times greater than those who I take shelter of here, then just like I'm serving here with affection, I should be serving Krishna with affection. I always like the class Prabhupada gave in Sanan, India, on Maya Shakta Manaparta, that to always concentrate our mind on Krishna with attachment. And Prabhupada says, we already know how to be attached. So do that for Krishna. And Prabhupada, I really like it that how he emphasizes in the purport that it doesn't matter what materially you are. You know, Dhruva Maharaj couldn't have done karma kanda at 5 years old, Prabhupada said. I mean, of course, he could do his duty for a five-year-old. But he wasn't really qualified to do all the rituals of fruitive activities. But he could love God with affection. That's easy for anyone. I mean, I've seen in our Krishna consciousness movement people who are severely physically impaired, severely mentally impaired, or both. And they can love Krishna with attachment. I mean, I've seen devotees who are, they can hardly speak. Well, they hardly have control over their bodies. But they're able to do bhakti. Now, when I got second initiation, I saw Srila Prabhupada initiated this devotee in a wheelchair, you know, she was barely able to have any control over her body whatsoever. She could hardly grab the beads that Prabhupada was giving her. And yet she could do bhakti. You know, the most sinful person, Jughai, Madhai, Magrari, the hunter, the prostitute who tried to induce Haridas to fall down, they can engage in bhakti. I was just hearing, just this morning, Prabhupada was saying, even if you can't follow the regulative principles, just chant Hare Krishna. Still, you can chant Hare Krishna. So anybody can engage in bhakti. There is absolutely no disqualification. When we take prasadam, we're feeding that prasadam to the cells in our body. You can feed prasadam to an animal. You can chant to an animal. So there's no situation a jiva can be in where they can't do bhakti. Prabhupada says when you take a flower from a tree and offer it to Krishna, that tree is benefited. Why? Because bhakti is natural. We're already engaging in activities of attachment and affection. We're already doing that. Everyone is doing that. Even the plants are doing that. There's this book I read a while ago called The Secret Life of Trees, how the trees are helping each other. They're communicating with each other. They're helping each other. That if one tree is sick, the other trees will share nutrients with that tree underground through the roots. Even there was an instance of a tree that was cut down. It had no leaves at all to gather its own sunlight. And the trees around that tree were supporting that tree for dozens and dozens of years through the roots. As that tree could gradually generate. You know, sometimes you see that. A tree is cut down and you see the tree generates more branches and more leaves. But how does it get the energy to do that? The other trees are helping it out. The other trees are like, oh, some member of our community is sick, is injured. So we all do that. We all serve somebody. Prabhupada would say, if you don't have anyone else to serve, you buy a dog to serve. It's natural. That's our inherent dharma, is to serve. And to serve with some attachment and affection. Everyone does that. You know, even sometimes criminal people, they have a dog that they're serving. So we just have to take that same serving propensity and use it for Krishna. It's actually very simple. If we love someone in this world, we talk about them. And we talk about them favorably. We glorify them. We like to say their name. When we say their name, we immediately think of them. We glorify their name. We glorify their activities. We glorify their form. We glorify their qualities. So we do that for Krishna. Now, at first, we may have to do that as a practice, as a sadhana, as abhyas yoga. Okay, I got to sit down and say Krishna's name. Okay, I got to sit down and glorify Krishna. I got to glorify his form and his qualities and his pastimes. Okay. You know, I'll do that as a practice. And at first, it may be because I want some wealth or some facility in the world, or I want liberation, or I'm curious, or for the rare souls who they're already Brahman realized and they want to go higher. So, you know, but eventually we start to feel some affection for Krishna. And who can't do bhakti? You know, however busy we are, however distracted we are, certainly we can give a few hours of our day to concentrated focus on the Lord. I mean, we're certainly giving some time every day to the other objects of our devotion, to our body, to our mind, to our family, to our friends, to our boss at work, our co-workers, our customers, our clients, whatever, at our job, in our family, in our life. Why not give 2-3 hours a day just to Krishna? Now, the average person in America spends 6 hours a day watching television, which I still can't figure that out in a 24-hour day. You know, how do you earn money and eat and have clean clothes and take a bath if you're spending an average of 6 hours a day watching television? But if people can do that, and that's average, some people are spending 10 hours a day watching television, that means, because obviously many of us are spending zero. So why can't we give Krishna a few hours a day? And to really give him that time to worship the deity form, to chant his name with focus and attention, to read about him from the Shastra, to tell others about him. You know, is it that hard to spend our time being attached to Krishna? He is our shelter. All of this energy that we're pouring into attachment to others, it actually doesn't go anywhere. We used to do this drama of the called the wrong bank account. And I must admit, when I was new in ISKCON and I would see this drama, I didn't really understand it. But you may know that anybody can put money into another person's bank account. You can't take money out of another person's bank account, but you can put money into another person's bank account anywhere in the world. If you know what bank they use and the routing number and the account number, you can put money into their account. So we used to do this drama of this man, every time he got a paycheck from work, he'd go to the bank and he'd put money in his account to save up for his retirement. So, you know, every 2 weeks, whatever, every month when he get a paycheck, he's depositing money into his account for savings. But then when he goes to retire and take the money out, there's no money there. And the bank manager said, you didn't put your money into your account. You put money into someone else's account. So when we're giving our devotion to this body, when we're giving our devotion to this mind, when we're giving our devotion to family, when we're giving our devotion to friends, an institution, even a religious institution, if we're doing it separately from Krishna, if we're even giving to a religious institution or to devotees or even to guru, separate from Krishna, then we're putting money into the wrong bank account. If we're thinking this person, this group of people, you know, my country, my company, somehow my group, the group's going to save me, we end up with nothing. Oh, we end up with nothing. It wasn't the real thing. So we should take that energy and put it into Krishna, to taking Krishna's shelter, not only in terms of our external activities, but primarily in terms of our attachment. And Prabhupada also makes a very important point here, that's not just for our sadhana time. So far I've been talking about our sadhana time, having that concentrated time for our hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, and so forth. But it's also while we're doing our activities in the world, because we do have to take care of the body. I mean, great souls only need to sleep for a couple hours a night. I'm obviously not one of them. I had an overnight flight the day before last where I didn't sleep. And, you know, I was falling asleep and standing up after some time. But the great liberated souls, they don't have to sleep. Just hour and a half, 2 hours a day. They hardly have to eat. Many of them have no need to work or have family. But even they have some interaction with the world, unless they're like Judd Bharat. But for most of us, we do have to take care of the body. The body has to sleep, the body has to eat, the body has to be cleansed. I mean, all that takes a lot of time. Sleeping takes so many hours every day. And, you know, we're taking care of our body, we do take care of our families. I mean, even Prabhupada as a sannyasi sent money to his family regularly. Even those in the renounced order, they may go take care of their mother, their father, right? They may see their children. So we have what to speak of someone who's in the grihastha ashram. To take care of their family is their duty. And in the grihastha ashram, you have to have an occupation. But that should all be dedicated to Krishna also. We should be doing those things to please Krishna. As Prabhupada translates here, Mama Nusmram Yuja Cha, go on fighting, but keep me within your mind. So I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm feeding my body for Krishna, to make Krishna happy. I'm cleansing my body to make Krishna happy. I'm caring for my mother, my father, my children, my wife, my husband, to make Krishna happy. I'm working at my job to make Krishna happy. Krishna wants a society to go on in a regulated way, and I'm doing my job there to make Krishna happy. I'm a cell in the universal body, and just like the cells in my body work to make me happy. So I work to make Krishna happy. And if everyone in the world is doing their job to make Krishna happy, then the world becomes, practically speaking, like Vaikuntha. And this should be our main preaching. If we want to transform the world and make the world Krishna conscious, one of the most important ways we can do that is for people to learn how to please Krishna through their daily activities. Yes, we can teach people to have a designated time of the day for regulated sadhana that's distinct from the other kinds of things they do during the day. Just like even in a family, a man doesn't just work for his family, or a woman doesn't just work for his family, they also spend time with their family. The husband comes home from work and he's with his wife. He's not just working for his wife, he spends time just being with her. So our sadhana time is like that. It's a time that we're not working for Krishna, we're just being with Krishna. But it's in addition to teaching people that, I mean, we're going to teach people how to have kirtan, how to chant japa, how to offer their food, we also need to teach people how to do their work for Krishna. As Krishna tells Arjuna, nobody can maintain their physical body without work. So how to do your work for Krishna? How to dedicate everything you're doing for Krishna? So that means working according to your nature. Otherwise, you can't do the best service for Krishna. My heart muscles can only do the best service for my body when they act as a heart. If my heart muscles decide to act as a liver, you know, that's not going to be the best service for me, for my body. So to act according to our nature, to give in charity. You know, each cell of my body is contributing to the welfare of all the other cells in my body. And to work for the benefit of the body as a whole, to work for the benefit of the other organs and cells in the body, to work according to my nature, to have proper cooperation with others, and to always think of Krishna. I mean, the cells in my body are not developed enough in consciousness, I don't think they are, that they even know that I exist. You know, the cells in my heart, in my brain, they don't know that I exist, which is a whole other topic as far as matter and spirit also, and consciousness. That each cell in my brain is conscious of itself, but it's not conscious of me, the jiva who runs this whole body. So I have to be conscious of the super soul who runs the whole universe, who's the soul of the universe, and who's the ultimate soul in my body. So while I'm doing my activities, I dedicate everything to him, to that person. And if we teach these two things, how to have distinct part of our day for regulated sadhana, where we're with Krishna, we connect with Krishna, and how to connect with Krishna while we're doing everything else. Why? Because Krishna is the shelter. He is the shelter. He's always there, past, present, future. He's always fully our friend, and he has the capacity to give us everything. Then the whole world is Vaikuntha. And if we can just do it on an individual level, then our life becomes like Vaikuntha. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Hi, Krishna.
Wonderful class, and something I really needed to hear today. And about taking shelter of Krishna and Krishna being our only shelter, how should we feel that Krishna is giving us shelter in certain situations? Like, let's say I could be at one temple, which is like a very family-like temple, and devotees are sweet, and they look after one another, and they, you know, they care about you. And so this comes across to me is, you know, Krishna, especially with devotees, Krishna is caring and you know, looking after me through the devotees. And then I go to another temple, larger and a little bit more impersonal, and nobody gives a hoot, and you're just, it's like everyone, even amongst themselves, is like every man is for the, you know, looking after themselves, and they don't care what is happening to you, they don't, you know, pick you up at the airport, or, you know, and how can one feel that, you know, Krishna is the shelter in all circumstances when sometimes it really seems like, you know, he's not, especially as manifested through his devotees sometimes.
First of all, I'd like to suggest that maybe when we think like that, we're not seeing Krishna, we're seeing people independent of Krishna. So we're thinking, well, because this person is a devotee of Krishna, therefore that person should act as my shelter. So we need to be careful that we don't try to make jivas, you know, individual jivas or groups of jivas our shelter. They may be there for us, they may not be there for us. But Krishna is always there for us, whether or not others are there for us. And, you know, we may think, well, because they're devotees, they should act as a shelter. But that mentality on our part is not much different from because they're family, they should act as a shelter. It's actually a very, very similar mentality. You know, we can think because they're my tribe. You know, I mean, for example, we also accept that people in other religions are devotees of Krishna. But would you expect if you visited a city that people in the local Catholic church would receive you at the airport and treat you as a brother or sister? No, you wouldn't. You know, we wouldn't necessarily think that people in other faiths would treat us like that and take care of us. But we accept that they're devotees. So often we think that, well, the other people in the Hare Krishna movement should take care of me. But that it's more tribal and it's more family oriented. Like, I don't even think that people in other Gaudiya groups outside ISKCON should take care of me. I don't expect that. You know, if I'm going to visit Alachua, like there's a big Narayan Maharaj group there, I wouldn't expect that they're going to pick me up at the airport and they're going to say hello to me and they're going to feed me. In fact, if they do, I'm very thrilled. Wow, somebody outside of my particular group is being kind to me. I'll feel especially grateful. You know, here on the big island of Hawaii, where there's so many different Gaudiya Vaishnava groups, the fact that people of the various groups are welcoming and are accommodating and work together and are kind to me is something that I'm much more appreciative of than when people in ISKCON are kind to me. And I tend to kind of expect that. Well, they're in ISKCON, I'm in ISKCON, and of course they're going to be kind to me. You know, I may not feel grateful for it. But that kind of thing comes much more from a family or a tribal mentality, much more than, well, is it Krishna? You know, if some random person on a plane or on the street is unkind to you, you know, you don't think, oh, where's Krishna? Why is Krishna allowing anybody to be unkind to me or anybody to neglect me? So that's one thing that we really, really have to be careful that we don't project a materialistic family tribal concept onto quote-unquote the other devotees and then say, well, because they're devotees, they should do this and this, but really thinking because they're family, because they're my group, because they're my tribe, they should do this and this. But Krishna's mercy, to answer your question as you've put it, Krishna's mercy is there whether people are kind to me or unkind to me superficially. Because Krishna's mercy is he wants to help me to achieve ultimate unlimited peace and happiness and knowledge. That's what he wants. Krishna's actually not that interested in whether or not I achieve temporary material happiness independent of that other goal. I mean, just like if you go to a doctor, the doctor's interest is for you to be healthy. And if you can be healthy through things that are immediately pleasurable, that's good. But that's not his ultimate goal. You know, if he has to give you an injection or a painful diagnostic test or some medication that has side effects, you know, he's perfectly willing to do that in the goal of making you healthy. So Krishna would want all of his devotees to be materially prosperous and materially healthy. It's not that Krishna wants us to have some material distress. That's not true at all. Just like even, you know, a doctor or a parent or a teacher, they don't want the person under their charge to have any even immediate distress. That's not their purpose. You know, when your parent says, put your toys away and come for dinner, it's not that they're thinking, I don't want them to be happy playing with toys. That's not true. They want you to be happy playing with toys in the moment, but it's more important that you eat. So sometimes Krishna sees if we're not using our pleasant material circumstances to connect us with Krishna properly, then Krishna may see that we need some circumstances that are not so materially pleasant. You know, it's like if you see that your kids aren't doing their homework voluntarily, then you may take away their computer, you may take away their toys, so that they'll focus on their homework. So again, Krishna would prefer, I mean, if the whole world is Krishna conscious, it also becomes very materially prosperous. And in Satya Yuga, everything's pleasant, basically. You know, and on the higher planets, people are much nicer to each other and so forth. So if someone's more qualified, then Krishna does give them everything materially. And they will be with people who are nice to them and so forth. But sometimes that's not, the materially nice situation is not helping us in our spiritual life. And to a large extent, that's up to us. It really is up to us. If when devotees are pleasant with me and treat me nicely and pick me up at the airport, I get into a tribal family mentality and I forget that it's ultimately Krishna, then Krishna may put me in a situation where people don't treat me so nicely. And if in that situation I blame Krishna, I withdraw from the devotees, I withdraw from my sadhana, you know, then he may give me more of that, frankly. Until I finally learn that, wait a minute, this is about my relationship with Krishna. I mean, what I'm trying to do more and more is say, okay, Krishna's giving me this situation to increase my patience. Or Krishna's giving me this situation to increase my charitable disposition. Or my humility. You know, instead of thinking, well, I'll just get through this bad situation as fast as I can till I can get in a good situation. To think, how is this good? How is this Krishna's mercy? How is Krishna my shelter in this situation? How can I relate to him in this situation so that I realize that he's my shelter? And the more that we do that, the less that we need to be put in situations of difficulty. Of course, sometimes Krishna puts his devotees in situations of difficulty because he has a job for them to do. Like Arjuna, you know, he had his family members try to kill him, for goodness sake. I mean, really. You know, we're moaning and complaining that somebody doesn't pick me up from the airport, but they're trying to kill him. So.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Very good point.
I mean, Bhishma and Drona. Bhishma and Drona. I mean, you had here, you know, Suruchi insulted Dhruva. But Bhishma and Drona were trying to kill Arjuna. They were trying to kill Arjuna. I mean, just think about that. Arjuna was Drona's best student. And Drona had a huge relationship of affection for Arjuna. Drona loved Arjuna. Bhishma loved Arjuna. They deeply, deeply loved them. Bhishma and Drona would have sacrificed their lives for any of the Pandavas. But there they were trying to kill them. there Krishna had a mission, and for that mission, Arjuna was put into a situation of dealing with inimical family members, because there was a mission for the world. That wasn't for Arjuna's personal purification. So Krishna puts us in situations where others don't act properly for both of those reasons, because he has some business for us to do, some mission, and that's part of it. Or because we're fools, and unless we're in those sort of situations, we don't understand things. So in either case, let us be intelligent and let us see everything as, how is Krishna here? Instead of why is he not here according to my idea of what he should be and how he should be, how is he here? In what sense is he here? In what sense is he giving me a shelter here? I mean, I mean, very minor and insignificant kind of thing, but, you know, for me, the biggest anxiety in traveling is going through security. You know, or going through a check-in line where they're going to weigh my bags. Those two things are, you know, really stressful. And when I went through security just recently in New Zealand, so both my main bag and my backpack were pulled out to go through, and I'm like, oh, God. So the guy who's going, you know, my initial reaction is like that. Because right before I went through security, I always, like, Krishna, please, let them just have my bags go through. Always. I always ask him that. Let my bags go through without any difficulty. I mean, one time, only one time, but one time through security, they took every single thing out of my bag. I ended up missing my flight.
Oh, my God.
I know it happened once, but it did happen once. Anyway, so I always pray like that. But they pulled over both of my bags. And I'm like, Krishna. So the guy who was going through my bags ended up to be from India. And as he's, you know, doing his job, he's got to do his job. And he says to me immediately, you're Hare Krishna, right? I'm like, yeah. He said, oh, I visit your temple here all the time. Oh, that's nice. And he says, where do you live? I said, well, my official residence is in Seattle. And he says, oh, my brother is an initiated devotee, and he lives in Seattle. And he says, I have another brother who lives in Portland, and he's also an initiated devotee. And I said, two brothers who initiated in ISKCON. I said, what about you? Why don't you take up Krishna consciousness seriously? And he just laughed. And I thought, okay, that's why Krishna had my bags pulled out. Because I had some service. He had some business for me. He had some service for me to do. You know, again, sometimes it's because I need the purification. Sometimes it's because I've gotten into a mood of taking shelter wrongly, of taking shelter in family and taking shelter in the institution and taking shelter in the tribe. And Krishna reminds me, no, not like that. Not like that. Just like we used to have, I give this example a lot, it's kind of hard to do this in a Skype class where you can't see me. But when we're teaching little children how to write with a pencil, there's a certain way to hold your pencil or pen so that you get less fatigue when you're writing. You can write for longer periods of time. So we want to teach the children how to hold their pencil or pen like that. But a lot of kids come to school already having held their writing implement wrongly. So we would have this little plastic thing that we could put on the pencil, and it has grooves in it for you to put your fingers in the right way. If you use this plastic thing with the grooves, then you hold the pencil or the pen in the right way. But the children don't like it because it basically forces them to do the right thing, so they don't like it. And they'll sometimes use it but resentfully. Oh, why is my teacher telling me to use it? Or they'll push it up and put their fingers over it, or they'll take it off. Or sometimes they'll get a second pencil and they'll switch it out. You know, when you're looking at them, they'll use the one with the little plastic thing on it, and when you're not looking at them, they'll use the other one. And of course, if they do that, then it takes them so much longer to get accustomed to holding their pencil properly. Instead of, you know, a week, it takes them months. So sometimes Krishna puts a little plastic thing on our pencil because we're not holding our pencil right. And sometimes he does it because we have some service. I mean, another example I can think of where I had a flight that was delayed and canceled and you know, I had to get rerouted. It was a whole big thing. And I ended up sitting next to a devotee on the rerouted plane. I ended up sitting next to a devotee who hadn't had anything to do with Krishna consciousness for many, many years. And this was the first time she'd seen a devotee in like 5 or 6 years. And I ended up giving her a book, and she said that she would start chanting again. And I thought, oh, Krishna put me through all this trouble because he wanted me to preach to this devotee. And then in that same trip, the second flight I was on, I ended up again next to a devotee. And in that case, that devotee had 4 seats to herself. It was an overnight flight from Frankfurt to Delhi. And so we were both able to sleep on the flight. She slept there for 3 hours. I slept there for 3 hours. And I saw that Krishna, by giving me all this trouble with my flight being canceled, had both given me some service in helping this one lapsed devotee and had given me a nicer facility. And then I said to Krishna, why didn't you just have me take these flights in the first place? Why did you first put me through so much trouble? And then I realized that those flights would have been double or triple the cost of the flight that I had originally gotten the ticket for. So there's all those reasons. You know, sometimes we're in bad situations because we're not treating the good situations properly. We're not dealing with them in the right way, and we need some fixing. Sometimes we're in bad situations because we have some job to do for Krishna that needs to be done in that situation. And sometimes we're in bad situations that are not really bad situations at all, that are actually for our even material benefit, and it's just not immediately obvious. It may be obvious after a couple hours, or it may be obvious after sometimes years. and sometimes it may not be obvious till we're out of our body. Sometimes it's when we're out of our body that we'll see, oh, by putting me in that materially distressful condition, you prevented me from being in a worse situation, or you facilitated some better situation, and I just couldn't make the connections. So it's already after 7. We could take maybe one more question from somebody.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Nobody's got anything else?
Oh, I had a question if I could.
Sure.
First of all, if one were to watch an extremely expert artist as they paint on their canvas, if they're very expert, you end up saying, gosh, they make it look easy. Mm. So that's like your classes. You make it seem easy. your classes flow so seamlessly and beautifully, and I'm just very indebted, so thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
So you mentioned about doing one's work for Krishna, and it becomes to me a little less obvious if one is not, you know, full-time active in the missionary movement in ISKCON and so forth, or living in a temple. And so my work is and has been, my professional work for over 30 years, is to assist nonprofits. And occasionally I can help devotees' nonprofits with their work. And then sometimes I make donations to one or another temple. But simply if I don't think you're saying this, but simply if I say, oh, I'm doing this for Krishna, this is my occupational duty, this is what I'm suited for, that's my service, I don't know how to tell others how they can work for Krishna in their occupation, because I don't know how to myself, other than the two things I mentioned, monetary donations and occasionally helping people in my professional capacity. Do you understand?
I understand very well, and in fact, this point that you brought up, I am personally convinced is probably the most important thing that needs to be done if we want to have our own devotee society flourish and if we want the world to accept Krishna consciousness. I think that we look at other things like what clothes we wear and what food we eat, which certainly have importance. But this is the most important thing. Because as our devotee society develops, more and more people are not working in the missionary activities or for the deity worship directly, but are working professionally in the world in some kind of capacity. And if we make the whole world Krishna conscious, I would assume that the vast majority of people are going to still continue to work for a livelihood outside of the missionary activity. I mean, if the whole world were Krishna conscious, exactly who would we be missionaries to? You know, that's another interesting point. I remember my mother used to say, so you all live in the ashram and you sell books, and then the people who buy the books move into the ashram, and if you made everybody devotees, who would they sell the books to? I guess to each other. And everybody would just live in the ashram. You know, that it wasn't... We didn't have a good vision for society. So I just recently gave a class in Auckland where we spent about an extra half an hour talking about our vision for a Krishna-conscious society. Right now I'm working with a devotee named Rukmini, not Anutama's wife Rukmini, Dr. Ruchira Dutta. We're working on a book on how to spiritualize career. And we hope to have this printed by next January with your blessings and good wishes. And I already have some engagements outside of ISKCON to teach this book. But this is the real key. So if you want, I could try to explain it briefly. Let me open up a file here.
And I promise to buy your book when it's released.
Well, I don't think we're going to have any trouble selling that book. I'm seeing, if it's a good job, you know, if we do a good job, we're going to have to be counting on our editors for that, making sure it's a good book, that it's well written. The first way in which our career is Krishna's service is that the universe is Krishna's body. And the fact of the universe being Krishna's body is stressed both in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam. There are several chapters in the Bhagavatam that basically do nothing except explain how the universe is Krishna's body. So our occupation, we're like a cell in the body of the Lord. And our occupation, our general occupation of which we're a part, is like one of the organs of that body. So Krishna wants his body to be healthy, like any of us want our body to be healthy and functioning. That's what he wants. So when we do our occupation properly, we are contributing to the health of the universal body. Which means that, and why does Krishna want his universal cosmic body to be healthy? Because it facilitates everybody in an indirect way to become Krishna conscious. Like, why do I want my own body to be healthy? I've recently made huge strides in my physical health. And I suppose, not surprisingly, having a healthier physical body has definitely contributed to having more ease in my sadhana and in my preaching. I mean, like, duh, of course it does. If my body is sick and in pain and disabled, then it's a lot harder to do my service and my sadhana, right? I mean, that's just like a duh. Correct? So if the,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, of course it is. If you're lying in bed, you know, in terrible pain, and your mind can't think properly, and you can hardly move, it's hard to chant your 16 rounds. It's hard to read. It's hard to preach. It's hard to do anything. You can do it, but it's very difficult. So if the universal body is sick, then it's very difficult for people to engage in bhakti. It's hard. And it pains the Lord in one sense. So our doing our occupations properly contributes to the health of the universal body, and therefore contributes to a foundation for bhakti, which is as important as my brushing the teeth of this body. You know, I can see my body belongs to Krishna. Just like I have a grandson-in-law who's in the Marines, and my granddaughter was telling me that they tell them, you've sold your body to the U.S. government. You know, your body is now government property. One day he got a sunburn and he was punished for damaging government property. So you know, just like my body is Krishna's property, and therefore I cleanse it and etc., decorate it with tilak and neck beads as Krishna's property. So the universal body, it's not just Krishna's property, it is Him Himself. And I can literally understand. In fact, Prabhupada explains Varnashram like this in a book he wrote before he came to the West on the conversation between Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. And Prabhupada explained Varnashram, and Varna is career. Varna Dharma means your career. And he explained that everyone's career is meant to give health to the universal body. So we can definitely feel like that. This is, I'm doing this service for Krishna's body, for a part of Krishna's body. And what are nonprofits doing? You know, you say you work in nonprofits. So nonprofits, they're going to be probably either charitable or religious, yes?
And educational, yes.
And educational. Okay. So as educational and religious, they're in the Brahmana Varna. And as charitable, they're primarily in the Kshatriya Varna, though the Brahmins also collect charity. So the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas collect money and redistribute it. The Brahmanas usually do that on a smaller scale than the Kshatriyas. But in the realm of ideas, people collect charity and redistribute it. And in the realm of government, one of the big businesses of government is to collect money and redistribute it. And, of course, the Vaishyas also do this. The Vaishyas also collect wealth and redistribute it. The Sudras a little less so, because the Sudras don't collect a whole lot of wealth. So with nonprofits, you're primarily working in the Brahmana Varna, and maybe to some extent, if some of the nonprofits are like NGOs, where they're doing government work but privately. So that's also considered within the Varna of government. So you're facilitating the spread of ideas, and you're facilitating the spread of care for the good of the population. So how do we do this for Krishna? Okay, well, first of all, we should be acting according to our nature, which I don't have time to get into the details of that. But we should be acting according to our nature, just like, as I was saying, the stomach cells should be in the stomach, and the heart cell should be in the heart, and the lung cell should be in the lung. So if I'm acting out of my nature, then I'm just causing a disturbance in the universal body. So that's the first thing. Then the next thing is that I shouldn't be working under what we call in our book the shades of ego. I should be working egolessly. So I shouldn't be working in tamagun, rajagun, or sattvagun. How to work egolessly is given particularly in Bhagavad Gita 3:30. So if we look at Bhagavad Gita 3:30, we see that one should dedicate one's work to the Supreme. One shouldn't be lethargic. One shouldn't think that I'm the doer. We should be doing honest work. Now, it's hard sometimes to do honest work in today's world, because if the companies we're working for may not be working honestly. But Varna Dharma means honest work, and honest work means that there's a fair exchange. So at least for myself, I can charge fairly for the services or the goods that I provide, not charge exorbitantly. I cannot exploit the people who are under me. I should not be in an occupation that's grossly exploitive. I think trying to be in an occupation that's not exploitive at all in 2019 is going to be difficult. I should be in some sort of work that provides for people's real needs, not manufactured needs. Again, I may not have control over that entirely. And I should try to be an agent of bhakti in my work. I should be trying to spread love of God in my work. Now, that might be through giving people prasadam, but it might also just be in terms of not seeing friends or enemies, being kind to all living entities, the kind of qualities that please Krishna. Now, Krishna talks about in chapter 12, verses 13 through 20, what pleases him. Certainly I can do that in my work, to be detached from fame and infamy, honor and dishonor, success, failure, friends and enemies. just acting like that in my work is a very powerful form of spreading love of God to others, even if they just, even if they're not aware of that. I should give in charity, not only for the spread of bhakti, but I should be charitable to those who are less fortunate than myself. I should have regular sadhana, regular times of doing yajna for the Supreme. Then I should cherish the source of my wealth, because they're all Krishna. That means taking care of my body and mind, taking care of those people who work under us, taking care of the natural resources that I'm using in my work. I should be protecting the opulences that I enjoy. I'm going to be talking about today, this afternoon, physically here in Hilo, the six opulences of the Lord, and also relating that to the way that we like to be prosperous. So if I, you know, we like to be prosperous in one or some combination of the six opulences. And how we want to be prosperous also is some indication of our nature. But if I'm working with virya, if I'm working with strength and health, if that's one of the ways in which my career provides for my own prosperity, then I should be protecting that. If I'm working with beauty, then I should be protecting beauty. If I'm working with leadership and control, I should be protecting that, making others feel smart, empowering others. If I'm working, if I like to enjoy fame, which means basically community, if I like to enjoy family and society and others thinking well of me, then I should be building communities and building gratitude. If I like to work with knowledge, then I should be giving others knowledge and giving others clarity and understanding. If I enjoy the prosperity of vairagya, of freedom, then I should be not repressing others and giving to others freedom. Then I should be cherishing my field of work, which is the field of ideas, government, resources, and artistry. So, you know, like I say, it sounds to me like your work is primarily, I'm not sure if you're in the field of ideas, it depends what you're doing, or if you're just supporting others in the field of ideas and government. If you're in the field of ideas and government, that's a little different. If you're supporting those who are in the field of ideas and government, then you're in the field of artistry. So if you're in the field of ideas, then one has to cherish independence of thought, diversity of thought, and the long view. If you're in the field of government, then you should make sure you protect all people, that you cherish and, what would we say, encourage long-term thinking. If you're in the field of resources, then you particularly need to protect the earth and all living beings. If you're in the field of artistry, then you need to protect standards of service, and you need to protect quality of service. Okay, let's look again at Gita 3:30, which really gives you a means of Varna Dharma. So dedicating the work to Krishna. That means on a conscious level, Krishna, this is for you. When I was at the St. James School, before every class, they would dedicate in Sanskrit, Paramatma, this class is dedicated to you. And at the end of every class, we have dedicated this class to you. And Krishna talks about this, of course, in the 17th chapter, where he says you dedicate everything with Om Tat Sat. So before the day of work, this day of work is dedicated to you. At the end of the day of work, this day of work has been dedicated to you. Or maybe each hour, or maybe each project. Letting go of desires to enjoy the six kinds of opulences independently, but cherishing them in Krishna's service with awareness that I'm a soul, that I'm doing this work at, you know, as a service in this world, but I have my real service in the spiritual world. Not thinking you own the work. Remembering that Krishna is the owner of the work. Again, in 3:30, acting to our own nature and not being in the lethargy of fever. And then there's those are on an individual basis, on systems basis. Krishna wants competition within a field. So competition within a field increases the quality of everything within that field. So you want nonprofits in the same field to have some friendly sportsman-like or sportsperson-like, I suppose we say now, competition with each other. You know, you want that. Otherwise, the quality within the field will degenerate. But this means respect for others we defeat, not punishing them, having competition on a fair playing field. And then we want to cooperate between the fields. So the nonprofit should be competing with government. The nonprofit should be competing your nonprofits you're working for should be competing with those in the field of resources and those in the field, I mean, cooperating with those in the field of resources and those in the fields of artistry. So, you know, you want to make sure that your nonprofit work is in competition with other people in similar fields, but friendly competition to build quality and cooperation with those in the other fields. And then there's checks and balances that to make sure that we honor the checks and balances within the society to keep those within our work honest and to keep those within our work actually acting according to higher principles. And everything should be working to push people to love of God and to sustainable material prosperity within the society. And if we do that, then our work is service. And in fact, if we do that, there becomes no difference between our work and our sadhana. What does Krishna say? Then everything merges into transcendence. Or the iron rod, which is as hot as the iron and can burn things just like the iron. So again, this was a very quick summary of a 300-page book. We have a lot in our book about how to find your nature, how to identify your nature.
That's pretty elaborate.
Yeah, there's some help you might be able to give me with the nonprofit I run. You could ask me later.
Sure, happy to.
But in the course of your work itself, even if you're not doing those two things, helping other devotees with their nonprofits and contributing, you know, cash. And charity, by the way, that we give, we're all supposed to give charity from our work. Charity is not just cash. Each of us is enjoying some combination of the six opulences. We're supposed to give those in charity also. We're supposed to protect, especially we're supposed to protect the opulences that we enjoy, both for ourselves and in the society, and we're supposed to give those in charity. So we have whole sections on that, you know, how to give the various Yasha and Aishwarya and Veera and Shri, and etc. in charity. Is that all right?
Thank you, yes. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was better than all right. Thank you, Mataji. That was so good.
Thank you very much. I do have some things that I need to attend to, so thank you for engaging me in service. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.